Hey, I'm Lex.
And I'm Serena,
host of the Dream Body Playbook podcast,
a show all about transforming your life
and your body to what you've always dreamed of.
On our show, you're going to find hella inspiring guests,
and you'll get weight loss tips galore from top pros in the industry.
And you're going to hear fitness secrets from the CCP team.
Plus, you'll get nutrition and training help with our Is It Worth It episodes, where we'll review the latest trends hitting the internet to let you know if it's actually worth your time.
Listen every Wednesday to the Dream Body Playbook.
All right. Well, welcome back, you guys, to the Dream Body Playbook podcast. We have a very special guest today, very different than we normally do. First male guest. Okay, we had Travis, but that's right. Don't mind us. It's a new year.
It is a new year.
There we go. First male guest of this year.
There you go.
There you go.
So this is Cody Watkins. He owns
Healthy Image Fitness and Nutrition.
Healthy Image. I want to say Beyond Image. Healthy Image Fitness Coaching. He has a pretty cool story, though. I know you got into fitness super young, around like 15 years old, right? I think I read that. And then you also have a really cool health kind of journey. I'm going to let Cody take us through his journey. But I really want to kind of set the scene of how you got to where you are today, because you have coached thousands of people to success. And I want to kind of hear the background of like that whole process. So welcome. Super excited to talk. Take it away.
Yeah. So like you said, I started early, 15 years old, typical, I think, male starting point. You're skinny fat, right? Yeah. So you got little man boobs. You don't want to look like the guy that needs to wear a bikini. It's not a good starting point, right? So I got into it a little bit more in high school, and I was like the anti-exercise guy. So I didn't want anything to do with it. I hated fitness. Well, I didn't really know. It was probably mostly due to my heart problem that I had, a genetic defect, but yeah. I would be the guy that runs,
saying it.
I would attempt to run the mile, and I'd be the guy thrown up after, right? Okay. Whether I was in shape or not. And so I always just, you know, for that reason, hated cardio, hated exercise and all that. But I got into it, got into powerlifting, transitioned into bodybuilding, got started in personal training at 24 Hour Fitness. I think that's pretty much where we all start, something like that. Mm-hmm. I did that for 3 or 4 years, became a competitive bodybuilder, had a bunch of, you know, trials, tribulations through that process, you know, tearing a muscle here, getting it reattached, competing later. But then in 2018, I was about 6 weeks out from a bodybuilding show. I had just a DEXA scan. I was 7% body fat. I'm like, cool, this is going to be the easiest prep yet. I'm like 250 pounds. Like, this is easy.
I got this in the bag.
Exactly. I was like, oh man, my easiest prep. I wasn't even, zero cardio, right? It was super cakewalk, right? Then the next day I'm training one of my clients in person and my resting heart rate is like 110. And I'm like, feeling super off. So I'm keep checking my Fitbit, right? And I'm not the kind of guy that would cancel a client like 3 minutes before they come in, but I just was feeling off. So I canceled the rest of my day, you know, about 10 more people. I'm like, I got bad sleep. I need to go home and nap. So I went home and, you know, tried to nap it off. As I'm, you know, napping on the couch, my heart rate's still like 110.
Yeah.
Like,
I need
to take a cold shower, right? Get in the shower, same thing, right? And I'm like, my electrolytes are off, right? Because you know how it is, right? You guys are at home.
Let's go down through the list.
Yeah,
you know, through the list. What could be wrong, right? And because, you know, at the time I'm 30 years old, I don't think anything could be an issue that's a bigger issue. So I drive up to the Minute Mart and I'm like, I'm going to get me a coconut water. That'll solve my electrolyte problem. So drinking the coconut water, and I have this big old lifted truck at the time, of course, right? And I'm driving this back and my resting heart rate's now 135. And I'm like, that's not good, right? So I drive home and I'm not someone who externalizes things too well. I'm either like happy or mad. Well, scared is not an emotion I really know how to showcase, right? So I get home, I had text my wife and she works from home. And I'm like, hey, I think I need to go to the urgent care or the ER. Something's going on. So she doesn't normally get that for me. So she comes out and hands me my insurance card. She goes, okay, drive up to urgent care, because I didn't really say, hey, like, I feel like I'm dying, because that was more or less what it was. And so I'm like, okay, well, when your wife's like 5'2" and like a tiny person, you don't want to, you know, bitch out, I think would be the right word about, yeah, okay, I'll drive up to the
urgent care. I got
this. Exactly. So I'm driving up to urgent care, and I have a car at the time too, right? But I'm not even thinking. So I'm driving this big old lifted truck and I'm driving up. And fortunately, urgent care and the ER were right next to each other where we were from. And I'm like, I feel like I'm going to die. Like, the vision's doing this. It's starting to go dark. I'm like, So now I'm trying to find parking in an ER parking lot in this big old pickup, right?
Well, you park in the middle, just leave it.
Yeah. So I was like way out in the boonies, right? I'm like, okay, like it's going black. I get in there. They throw me in right away because they don't take anyone serious. They get so many hypochondriacs in there.
Yeah.
So then they get me in. And granted, they have the tiny people arm cuffs that always spike blood pressure a bit more. But my blood pressure was like 260.
Oh.
And they're like, we need to get you back.
You need to go over there.
Yeah. So they get me back in, hook me up to the EKG. The thing is, my rhythm was normal. So the EKG didn't flag anything. It was just fast. So I was tachycardia. So they had me in the back room. And bear in mind, like I came from bodybuilding. All my blood parameters were great. I hadn't seen a primary doctor in 8 to 10 years. Right. So I'm in the ER and they're like, oh, well, maybe it's the caffeine you took. Maybe you're like trying to find anything. Yeah. And then one of the people, and I think it was their assistant, he was smart enough to have him look for troponin. And I had a slight elevation in that. And that will be elevated if you have a heart attack or hypertensive crisis. So then they're like, that shouldn't be there. So let's look a little deeper because they were going to send me home for anxiety.
Oh God.
So then they do an echocardiogram and so like imaging of your heart. Yeah, imaging of your heart. So they use it's like a sonar thing to get pictures of your heart. So it's non-invasive. Mm-hmm. And my aortic valve, the main one coming off the heart, is sitting there flapping like a whirly bird. Now it should look like this. There should be three little flaps, three little cuspids that do that. Well, I had a bicuspid, almost unicuspid valve, so birth defect that had tore. And they're like, oh, if it would have did this when you were training, you'd be dead. And I was training legs, you know, 12 hours prior to that. I'm like, oh,
great.
Fantastic to know. I didn't particularly want to die from training.
Yeah.
So then they get me back in, running all kinds of tests. My heart function was down to around 40%, just for point of reference. 50 to 60% is normal ejection fraction. So I was technically at that point was stage one heart failure.
Okay.
My heart was about three times the size it should be.
Wow.
And because it'd been working hard for, you know, a 10-year plus career bodybuilding. And at my peak weight, I was, you know, I'm 5'10", I was 275.
Yeah.
So I was a big human trying to work with a heart that wasn't particularly pumping blood that well. And so they were trying to figure out if they could do what is called a Ross procedure. They swap pulmonary valve for aortic. It's the same procedure Arnold had done. In my case, they figured it would rip. So they opted out of that. But anyways, it took 6 weeks to get scheduled for heart surgery. But because they had seen me at 40%, they're like, okay, we got time. Well, I was watching my blood parameters and everything on those was like, I'm dying. My liver enzymes up, kidney function going down, my hematocrit was everything saying that your heart was functioning worse was doing that. But they, like the numbers they had gone with, it didn't seem that way. So by the time they cut me open, I was regurgitating 50% of my heart blood was going back in my heart. And I was at 10 to 15% ejection fraction, meaning I was essentially functioning on 5 to 7.5% blood output from my heart.
Yeah. Wow. That's crazy.
Now I was still doing in-person training. I just made my clients move their own weights. And so I'd go like train two people. Come
like, I can't pick that up. You do it this time.
They told me I could walk, but not uphill.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was just really tired. So I was taking a lot of naps, but I didn't realize I was tired because I was essentially in stage four heart failure and dying.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
So then they cut me open. They ended up trying to repair it, put me back together. It ripped. So they ripped me back open, replaced the valve. And so I had roughly an 8-hour heart surgery. Now, it was supposed to be 5. Now, the guy doing my surgery, Dr. Ravi, great doctor, but he is a very small Indian guy. So he's like 140.
What's up, y'all? So we don't run ads on this podcast, and we probably won't ever. Our goal here is to share as much information and value with you as possible, with a little entertainment, of course. But with that, we need your help in getting the word out about the Dream Body Playbook. So all we're asking for you to do is send this episode to a friend that you think would really benefit from it, or share it on your social media stories and tag us. Also, one other thing we're going to be doing is giving away a $100 Amazon gift card to someone who rates and reviews this podcast every single month. So thank you in advance, and we're looking forward to reading your reviews, but we'll get back to the episode.
Yep. And so he comes out just sweating after working
on it. I was working out myself.
Well, like a typical person, like if they were going to fillet you two open, it would take roughly 45 minutes to get your rib cage filleted up.
Yeah.
It took him an hour and 45 minutes to take me apart, and then an hour and 45 minutes to put me back together.
Wow.
So I just 3 hours of just open and closing me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it, like, they're not used to working on guys my size. And so then they threw in, I have 7 plates and 28 screws in my chest. They put those in as well as the sternal wires. And then they put the biggest mechanical aortic valve in that they could. So kind of tick and sound like a stopwatch now, you know? Yeah. But when I got out, I was roughly 35 to 40% ejection fraction, still stage 1 heart failure, but fully functioning. So they're like, oh, you have preserved cardiac output. And I'm like, yeah, but I still am stage 1 heart failure, which has a 5-year shelf life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that doesn't sound good. So me and all my wisdom, I'm like, well, I want to see if I can still do this. So I decided I was going to do a bodybuilding show. And so I ended up competing 11 months after open heart surgery, you know, winning my class and doing that stuff. But I also reversed my heart failure herbally at that time. So all the pills and stuff they put me on, it didn't work. I was still the same function. And so I remember I was on my 3rd echo and my cardiologist went in. I was still 35 to 40%. And he's like, well, you're a preserved cardiac output, right? And I'm back down like to, you know, 8-9% body fat at the time, 6-8 weeks out from a show. And I'm like, yeah, I don't like that answer. So I reached out to a couple people smarter than me, Dante Trudel from True Nutrition, super smart guy. If anyone needs anyone to pick their brain, he's a very intelligent guy. But he's like, I'm like, hey man, here's what I'm doing. Here's the studies I pulled. I need more. Like, what can I do to throw in? So he's like, here's some data. Here's what I would do. I'm like, okay, cool. So I threw them in and then increased the dose on some CoQ10 picogenol. Anyways, I did another echo like 6-8 weeks later and my ejection fraction was 55%.
Wow.
And my cardiologist looks at it and bear in mind, it had been the same for 8 months prior. Mm-hmm. He goes, oh, well, that carvedimol must be working. And I'm like, okay. The same drug I've been on for 10 months. Now, in the last 8 weeks, while being in contest prep, mind you, my heart function has went up 15 to 20%.
Yeah, that makes sense. You're right.
Yeah, that makes total sense, right? And so anyways, I reversed my heart failure, ended up competing, doing all that. And so it was great from a coaching aspect, right? Because I had like the ultimate bullshit stick. So clients were like, I have these problems. You know my I'm like, yeah, I remember that time I had open heart surgery and had to come back and get in shape. It was tough. And they're like, yeah, I guess my problem is super significant, right? So it was good from that regards, but it taught me a lot too, because I didn't necessarily have training limitations, but from like a bodybuilding standpoint, like I wasn't messing with anything, whether it was caffeine, stimulants, supplementation, anything like that, that was going to increase my chance of getting back to the grave. So I played it just by the books, right? No. So I had to do it the old fashioned way, you know, hard work, cardiovascular, super strict on the nutrition, right? But it was great. I got down to like 5.1% body fat, you know, while reversing heart failure. So it was quite the experience, but I wouldn't wish it upon anyone, but I'm in a sense glad it happened because it was a learning curve I wouldn't have got any other way.
Right. And so this whole experience, was that before you started your business and started working with like personal training clients online? Because I know you're doing in person, but like, did you even have the idea of your business at this time?
Oh yeah. I've been doing online for 10 plus years, right? Okay. But more hybrid. So I would do some lifestyle clients, but majority of it was competitors coming from the fitness competition. But that whole industry, I don't really, a cesspool would be the right word for it, right? So there's a lot of broken individuals in that industry. Now, the bodies may look amazing, but the minds are usually broken. And it's just not healthy, right? So I actually preferred working with normal people, and I had worked with so many over the years. And when I got out, the competitors are cool because you can see the extremes of what the body can do.
Right.
But at the same time, it's not something that's sustainable. You see so many, you know, broken relationships, food eating disorders, all that stuff along the way. It's not something I like to promote. Now, if somebody comes to me and they're like, I want to do a show, it's not like I don't know how to do that, right? So right. I still have a few because, 10 years in it, right? I can't detour that. But normal people are my bread and butter. When it comes to working with people, just try to figure out normal. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and that's something we've preferenced on this podcast before, is that we are not bodybuilding coaches. Yeah. We much more like you, lifestyle, healthy habits, bringing back to the basics and things like that. Now, with someone who does come to you, I feel like you would almost be the person to coach bodybuilders, though, since you do have that understanding of the mentality of it, to where you can almost keep them in check in some way while while there are some coaches who just let them kind of spiral into more of what they're on unhealthy habits and stuff.
Well, it can work both ways, right? But the biggest thing is a bodybuilder and a normal person are not that different. Mm-hmm. And I say this in the context of, I think when people are coming into bodybuilding, they think chicken, rice, and broccoli.
Yeah.
And then you had someone like me, and I was eating 3 pizzas a week and showing up 5% body fat.
Yeah.
And people can't wrap their head around that concept because they're like, you can't do this. I'm like, well, I just did. So did this client, and so did this client. So basically, in my opinion, the only difference between a normal person and a bodybuilder is how far they go.
Yeah.
So like a normal person, we might stop at, for a male, 10 to 12%, right? Looks good, doesn't feel awful. Mm-hmm. For a bodybuilding, unless you like a 5th place trophy, that's not going to work, right? So we have to push that extreme a little bit. For ladies, same thing, right? If we get down to like 15 to 18% body fat, looks super good, but it's not enough to start throwing off the menstrual cycles and all that stuff. If we push past it, like you're not going to have a period by the time you compete. Your hormones are shot when it comes to that. And so you have to go through a whole process to come out of it. So it's finding that balance between look and function. And bodybuilding crosses the line in favor of look for function.
Yeah.
And normal people, we just pump the brakes right about here rather than go to the extreme. But the process is exactly the same for each one. Bodybuilders tend to just think they're special flowers and they have to do all this unique stuff. Like they burn calories different. They have to eat different food.
Yeah,
none of that's true.
The human body has a specific function. Obviously, everyone burns a little bit differently based off their metabolism. We'll talk about metabolic adaptation and stuff. But yeah, it's the same process. It's not like you have a different make.
No, it's not like the bodybuilder's like, oh, I can only eat chicken, rice, and broccoli to function. I mean, most of them think that, but it doesn't work like that. And that's why I think a lot of people get such a bad taste in the mouth for fitness, because they look at what these super in shape people do.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, God, I don't want to eat chicken, rice, and broccoli. I'm like, hey, me neither. So why don't we find some food you enjoy and get them to fit the numbers we need?
Literally. And that's something we hear too with a lot of our clients that come in. They're like, well, I just love food. And I'm like, great. Me too.
Yeah.
Like, awesome. I love it. Yeah. Let's do this thing. Like we have like different ways. And I know that's something that we wanted to talk about is like learning how to enjoy those foods. Cause it's also such like a diet culture mentality where you can't have the ice cream and you can't have the pizza. You can't have that glass of wine on date night or whatever. Because if you do that, your progress is going to be starting from scratch and you're going to lose everything you've ever worked for. When in reality, that's just not facts. That's just not science.
It's stepping out of that all or nothing mentality. And that all or nothing mentality, it will bite the extremists in the ass because they won't be able to make the progress they need to, because any hurdle that comes up, they quit. They don't find a solution that's maybe 80% of what they need to do.
Right.
And you're going to make a lot more progress doing the little bits than you are only if it all can be done.
Perfect. And I say this all the time. I mean, Serena can even tell you, and people listening, I've probably said it on this podcast, but like when we're climbing that mountain, we're going from point A to point B, right? No one ever climbs a mountain by like leaping from bottom to top. That never works, right?
And it's never a straight shot. Impossible. There's always a
right. We have to take the steps up the mountain to get there. And that's essentially where we have to break it down and make it more attainable for each person based off of their journey and what they have to do to get to their goals that they have. But that's where also the, I feel like people get really burnt out because they keep trying to jump to the top of the mountain. They keep trying to do it. And eventually
and they fall down every time.
You're gonna hit your face on the ground.
Yep.
And so that's where not only if there's like an obstacle, of course, that always there's a birthday party or there's a vacation that comes up. That's an obstacle that people see it as, but also they go 100 and like fabulous. That's great. But we need to create some balance there to where you don't burn yourself out because
it's got to have sustainability.
Right. You're going to hit a wall, right?
Yeah.
I was going to say something that some of the girls have been saying to me recently have been like, okay, I have this vacation coming up, or okay, I have a work trip or this or that. And I feel like that's going to derail me. And I'm like, okay, but it's a work trip that happens what? Once a year, twice a year, or you know, this vacation that you've this is essentially what you've been getting in shape for. So why is that going to derail you or make a difference? And so I feel like it's a big change around the mindset of, okay, I have to be 100% on all the time, even when I'm trying to enjoy what I've been working for this whole time. So I feel like, I guess, what could you say as another piece of advice to those people who are struggling with that mindset of they don't know how to kind of like actually take the break.
Well, and I don't even think you need to take a break from it. And I think that's the thing. When you go so extreme with health and fitness that it's sour to you, mm-hmm. of course you're going to want to turn it off when you go on vacation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I find the best is to meet somewhere in the middle, right? So you got to look at it from a number standpoint. So if a pound of fat's 3,500 calories, I could, if either one of you was one of my clients and you went and ate what you wanted for an entire day, you would never in your life eat enough to even put on a pound of fat that day.
Right.
So I think it's more or less giving them the tools to understand it, because where a lot of people fail is they think, oh God, I need to stick to my plan or I get instantly fat. Like I lick the slice of pizza and my belly. When really they'd have to eat the entire pie.
I didn't even have one pound.
Exactly. Like you bounce out 5 pounds of water. Absolutely. And right. that will be for 2 days. Breathe. You'll be fine. And yep. you'll be right back to being skinny. So for one, don't let the scale shackle you in and tell you your value. So if you get on that scale and you're up 3 to 4 pounds, don't look at it like, God, I'm fat. What do I need to do? Look at it like, why did this bounce 3 to 5 pounds? Was my fluid off? Is my uterus 3 times the size this week? Right. What is going on to fluke this? Because no human being consumed an extra 10,000 calories in a day and it all stuck as body fat. So right. when we know that, we can look at it a little bit more objectively. And then another thing, if you're someone who freaks out about the scale, I'm not an advocate of not weighing. I'm an advocate of getting different measurables. So if you measure your waist and all of a sudden you measure your waist and you're up 5 pounds, I'm going to look at that like a plus, because it apparently went the right places, because we're not fat, obviously, if we're not growing in the waist. Exactly. So there's things that can fill out with. And then from like a dieting standpoint, so if you're coming into a vacation and you've been dieting down, your glycogen levels are low. So even being a smaller human, you can hold 300 to 400 grams of glycogen. So stored carbohydrates in the muscle. Those grams of glycogen hold 4 grams of water. So you can have 400 grams as a, you know, in shape female, let's say you got some muscle, you can hold it. And then you can have another 1600 just in water. So you have 2000 grams, 454 grams in a pound. So you have 4 to 5 pounds of intramuscular fluid that has nothing to do with body fat.
Right.
So you can fluctuate that based on just getting some carbs and fluid back in. And so if you put on, you know, 3 or 4 pounds of muscle or glycogen, you technically went down in percentage of body fat.
Right.
If that scale goes up and it's down, cool.
And that's why I hate just like the traditional scale. Now these new technology scales that are coming out that will do like body comp, water weight, bone density, things like that. Love it. That's great. Yeah. But we also are huge on educating our clients around one, what you've just talked about, but also like simply using the number on the scale as a data piece. It means nothing more than a piece of data to get to where we want to go and reworking the wire around that, because people look at that number, 150 pounds. Okay, I'm 150 pounds of straight fat. Yeah. And I'm like, no, that's not it. That's you've got a skull, you've got bones,
blood,
all of this other stuff. Yeah. And so that's like one of the first kind of rewiring techniques that we will dive into with our clients when they first come on. Like month one for us right now, we just kind of pivoted our coaching style and stuff. And month one is like, let's focus on foundation, work on that mindset before we start to implement anything else. Let's assess where we're at and build that foundation. And I mean, everyone's heard this saying, but like when a house has a broken foundation, it's all going to come crumbling down at one point. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I think educating around, okay, here are the data pieces we're going to use, and this is why we're going to use them.
Yeah.
And helping people understand that, aside from just like what they've learned living in diet culture. And a lot of our women that we work with did grow up with like almond mom techniques and stuff, where they're just like, oh, I ate a cutie, cool, I'm full. Like, no.
yeah.
And like, that's kind of heroin
today. Yep.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And so helping them understand these data pieces and understand what they actually mean is so beneficial to that mindset of like that all or nothing that we were talking about.
You can understand what's actually happening. And then the other thing to take away is food is not good or bad.
Right.
It's just food. And so when we look at it like this, it's just different, because you can get fat eating oatmeal. Likewise, you can get skinny eating Snickers bars. Now, does that mean it's the ideal choices? Absolutely not. But at the end of the day, it's a numbers game. And when you can take the emotion out of it and look at it simply for that, it makes the process a lot easier, because when we're making emotional decisions, those who make decisions with an emotional mind will find themselves regretting it later. because you're making decisions based on being hungry, angry, you know, you're on your period, right?
Yep.
But if I asked you, like, what did you have for lunch 3 weeks ago? You're going to be like, wasn't that rememberable, was it?
Right.
So if you can't even remember it for being that moment it was, you had a moment of weakness. And usually we're going to see these when somebody doesn't keep themselves up to satiety, right? They're not full. And so you make bad decisions. We've all had those moments, right? We get home and we're like, oh, I'm starving. We're looking in the cupboards. I have to cook all this. There's nothing I want to eat. So we get in the car, we drive up to the fast food, drive home, and 45 minutes later, we're home when we could have cooked anything that was in those cups.
Yep. So, exactly. Yeah. And it's also too, like, when people do restrict so much, we have to look at blood sugar levels, right? Like, when our blood sugar levels tank, our body goes SOS, we need some type of fuel. And most of the time, it's going to crave carbohydrates and sugar because it's the highest.
Simple. Yeah.
Or fats and stuff. And so that's where you go to the fast food restaurants, the candy, the cake, the ice cream, all of those things. Because it's that your body's thinking, I need something to get me going again. It's essentially,
I'm going to die. Feed me now.
Right. We go, exactly. I know people use car analogies, but like you don't put gas in it, it doesn't go anywhere. Same with
and it doesn't care if it's Texaco, Chevron.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So I like this because this is something that I've kind of always thought about with like the calories in versus calories out, getting to a specific weight goal, right? Yep. Now, what would you say if someone was like, okay, it's not just calories in, calories out. We need to look at the quality of food that we're eating as well.
I would say that they're digging too many layers deep, right? So if I get somebody who's a new person, I don't need to dig the roots out yet. We need just to get that foundation up top, right? So you either eat more or less than you burn. It's as simple as that. Now, hormones, yes, they will factor in, absolutely. But it still will boil down to calories in, calories out for body weight.
Yep.
Now, we will have adaptation, metabolic adaptation, and we'll dive into that.
Yeah.
From a calorie in, calorie standpoint, this is, and it's an analogy, a lot of people don't like it, but it still doesn't change the fact. You show me someone that's obese, starving in Africa.
Yeah.
You won't. Right. You won't see it. They're emaciated because they don't have enough calories. And then we get over here to the US and people are like, I don't eat, I'm overweight. And not saying that you couldn't have impaired your metabolism over the years, which is backlash from many years of poor decisions. But at the end of the day, you're eating more than you think, or your metabolism is so impaired. Now you've made it a lot more challenging to get the results that you need to. But if you're not dropping weight, the calories are higher than what you're burning.
Right. And I love that you just made that point because that's so true. I mean, there's been studies that show that even people who work in health and fitness, like when we track our calories, it's still not 100% unless you are in the bodybuilding world and you're being super, super meticulous.
Even then though, you're still basing it on food labels.
Exactly.
Which are roundings of what they think a calorie is in it.
Exactly. So if you're listening to this podcast and you're thinking to yourself like, oh, I'm only eating 900 calories. I'm only eating 1200 calories. I'm still putting on weight. I challenge you, track your food as close as possible for the next like 3 days, because I guarantee you, you're probably eating more than that.
And side quest on that, because it says no calorie does not mean it's no calorie. So
okay, let's talk about that. I love that.
If we take a container of I can't believe it's not butter, and it says 0 calories, that entire container has almost 1500 calories in it.
Yeah.
So if you look, it's like half or a quarter spray, I think it is, for a serving.
Yeah.
So if you're like, all right, my potatoes taste like butter. Yes, that's because you essentially have put butter on them at this point.
Yep.
So you might as well have used the grass-fed butter, because at least that's healthy and not plastic.
You guys are really loving and relating to this conversation and want to continue to learn more about this topic and countless others. Listen up, this is for you. We want to give you access to our free community of women on similar paths to you. Shoot us a DM on Insta with the word Facebook and we will get you in there ASAP.
And you are eating more calories than you think. So
right, exactly. And that just kind of goes into portion sizes. And I mean, I think the most famous one that people mess up is peanut butter.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So, because it looks essentially the exact same on the spoon, but you can double the amount. And that goes from 210 calories to 450 to up to 500 calories. Well,
and even it's the liquid calories beyond that. That's where I think it hoses more people, because let's say we take something like, oh, I'm having protein shakes, but you're mixing everyone in whole milk. Mm-hmm. Well, you've added, 500 to 1,000 calories just by mixing up two healthy shakes.
Mm-hmm.
That's enough to stop your fat loss 1 pound a week.
Right.
Or you and get so, a whole bunch of Starbucks coffee drinks.
Exactly. And that, like, that girl working the counter, I know Starbucks website might say it's 500 calories, but if she's smashing extra caramel in it, mm-hmm. who knows where those calories are coming.
That's so true, because you don't have the control over, like, actually seeing what goes in it whenever you're getting places out. And I don't want people to take that statement to, like, the extreme of thinking, oh my gosh, I have to control over every single
I have to get everything at home.
Yeah, I have to do everything at home. No, we're talking, remember we said balance before. Yeah. But keeping in mind, if you do have a specific goal in mind, maybe that daily Starbucks trip needs to go down to, like, 2 times a week. Like, you know, just, like, minimize it a little bit.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of it too, it's looking at, is it a habit? Mm-hmm. Or is it an actual desire? So again, mm-hmm. when you've been doing it chronically, it's more habitual at that point. You're not like, oh, this karma mocha latte is so delicious. You're like, it's 7 a.m.
Yep.
I'm getting my coffee, right? It's just routine at that point. So I find the best things to do are find something where you still enjoy it. But maybe if you can squeak off an extra 100 to 200 calories off that and mm-hmm. still enjoy it, now you just bought yourself 2 hours you don't have to do on the stairs, right? It sounds fantastic.
Yeah, right. And I mean, there's so many different examples we can do, but like even cooking at home versus eating out during the week and stuff. Like if you are someone who you just, like you mentioned before, you get home, you're stressed out, you're tired, and you just go out to eat all the time. Maybe we learn to meal prep and make a scenario where it's a lot easier for you when you get home. And then when you do go out to eat on the weekends, you don't have to stress about it as much because you have maintained your protocol throughout the week that to where, okay, you've got a little wiggle room to go have fun and do whatever you want.
Well, and I also think to that extent too, meal prep shouldn't be a chore. So if you're someone who like, I don't like to cook, hey, me neither. I eat like 2 maybe cooked meals, I guess you could say, a week. The other ones, I buy pre-made meals from Costco. So I'm like, I put that in the microwave for 3 to 5 minutes. It tastes good. It hits the numbers I need and it's on the button, right?
Yep.
So if you find yourself dreading cooking, well, remove those friction points, because anything that's giving you grief on your journey, that's not going to get better with time. You might tolerate it as long as you're getting a result from it. Right. But as soon as the result's slow, you're going to look at it for what it is. And you're going to look at it like a monster versus if you're like, eh, this is easy.
Yeah.
Cool. Easy works.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 100%. And I think too, figuring out habits that are actually built into your lifestyle so that no matter the situation that you're in, maybe you move states, maybe you start school and you move into a dorm room, maybe you go on vacation, you can still take those like bulletproof habits that you already have instilled in you and make those healthy choices. And so it's a matter of, and also, I mean, it's a matter of figuring out what works for you. Because if it's not fun or enjoyable, or you just like simply can't make it work for your schedule,
yeah,
it's never going to work for you. You've got to figure out what you can be consistent with to make it successful.
Well, and I think it's also changing the outlook, right? So when a lot of people come to fitness, they look at it like it's finite, but this is an infinite journey. You don't beat fitness. Yeah. You're like, just got in shape, going to Dairy Queen, getting a Blizzard. I'm going to celebrate my in-shapeness by doing everything that wasn't what got me here. Yeah. So if you want to look at this from a longevity standpoint, if you're, you know, in your 20s, your 30s, your 40s, you don't put the time in, get in shape and then go, check, I beat this. And then you're in shape for the rest of your life. You have to do something to maintain it. Now, maintenance is substantially easier than getting there, but you have to take some of the skills that got you there in the first place and keep applying them. So find the stuff you enjoy, right? Maybe you don't like cardio, but you like playing whatever, pickleball or something. Cool. You're moving your body. You can do that instead of getting on the stairs.
Yep.
Now you're not dreading doing it, but you're still getting that activity in where you're getting that movement you need.
Exactly. Exactly. I think that's the key. That's like the secret sauce, you could call it, to like a fitness journey, is finding something that you don't dread doing. Like, you might not be like, heck yeah, going to like lift weights and getting all excited and stuff. I mean, some of us do sometimes, depending on your mood. But like something that you can go, that you know that for a fact you're going to do it and you're going to feel better after.
Yep.
It's not going to be something that you're like, okay, that still was really boring to me. I don't ever want to do that again afterwards. Yeah, like just exactly. Because you have to do it. Find something that works for you. Like we have a few clients that for cardio, like they love dancing. And I'm like, okay, cool. Let's do like dance cardio classes. Like let's do that instead. And then they're like, don't ever tell me to run a mile. And I'm like, I won't, I promise.
Yeah. I got one doing the VR right now, right?
Yeah.
I got this VR thing. I don't mind doing that. I'm like, fantastic. This great. Works. Yep.
Yep.
Well, and another thing too, I think if you really want to make your results stick and enjoy the journey, this is where it comes into like on the positive metabolic adaptation, but also on the negative side. So, you know, transitioning into that, if you can train your body to eat more calories, you will never get fat again because it will be a chore to get enough calories in. Versus if you permanently restrict, it will adjust to that and you're going to get less and less results for more and more work. And that's what we don't want to do.
Right. And I think that's something that people have a hard time understanding is that, like, when you eat less calories with this metabolic adaptation, your body naturally slows down its functioning to burn less calories so that you don't need as much. And you guys, you don't want that to happen. You want your body working and burning these calories off. Like I tell people, like, let's learn how to burn calories while we sleep. Like that's essentially what we want to do. But whenever you eat these low calories for this extended period of time, your body's going to naturally come to that because it's trying to survive. It's like, okay, if we're not giving me enough fuel, I'm going to come down and meet the level that you're giving me. And then that's when we hit those, whoop, we're halt. We're not seeing any progress at all. And we're super duper frustrated.
Well, and it's a three punch combo, right? So we'll have the basis of metabolic adaptation is the body goes, I don't like having this low stored energy. Like we don't like having light savings accounts yet. We want to tell our body to have a less savings account, right? Don't worry about it, buddy. There's not going to be a famine. I don't need that fat on my abs, but it doesn't understand that, right? It understands survive, not thrive. Yeah. The other aspect of it too, when people approach a fitness regime, if their routine that they're doing isn't conducive to keeping muscle on, the first thing that we're going to get rid of is muscle. So just strictly watching the scale, you might drop down, you're 150, now you're 140, now you're 130. You're like, man, I look amazing. But you look in the mirror and it doesn't always reflect that. So the problem is we've lost so much muscle along the way. Muscle is metabolism. So now we're burning less and less and less. And then the other factor that people don't apply to this, which is in a sense, part of the metabolic adaptation. If you started at 150 and you were doing an hour on the treadmill, and when now you're 130, do an hour on the treadmill, it's less effective. You weigh less, it's easier. So really we have to make these things more challenging along the way to force the body to keep making adaptations, or you're going to look at it like, I'm doing the same work. Why am I not getting the same results?
Right.
But really you're not doing the same work because the variables have changed.
Right.
That's a good point. So to break this down into easier terms, because right now we have a couple of clients who are, they were in the reverse process, but then they wanted to come out a little bit too soon. So we, you know, took them out of their, I guess, want or will, and they kind of went back up a little bit in weight. And so now it's the point where I'm trying to explain to them, hey, like, you know, we're in this metabolic adaptation principle. And it's kind of like, I've said it to them like maybe 6-7 times over the last few months. And it's like not clicking. So I guess, how would you explain that principle to them? So maybe if they're listening to this, it would click a little bit easier.
Well, you got to explain the why first. And I think that's the biggest thing. So anytime we're dieting down, if we get the body to a lean state, lean bodies respond better. So I owned a DEXA scan machine for 4 years, right? So the most accurate body fat test. If you got someone lean and they went to put on muscle, they'd always put it on at a favorable ratio. So they put it on 2 to 3 pounds of muscle for every pound of fat. If you had someone higher body fat attempting to do the same thing, there's a wicked spillover. So they get like 1 pound of muscle for every 2 or 3 pounds of fat. Problem is, our goal of a reverse is actually to crank the muscle up, which will in turn crank the metabolism. But if you have someone putting on 1 or 2 pounds of muscle for 4, 5, 6 pounds of fat, they're going to be percentages up. And they're not going to like the look because they're still running from that. So sometimes the approach has to be a little bit more subtle, or you almost have to bring them a little bit further into the dieting process to get that cushion you need in terms of body fat. Now, there's some people where the body start getting obstinate and they're stubborn and all that, and you have to put them in reverse and they will get fatter than they like. So it's kind of like a bow and arrow at that point, right? You have to pull it back to spring it forward. Now, this is where it's talking a person off a cliff in a sense, because you have to have that trust built with them where they understand that you have their best interest in mind. Because the biggest issue, especially working with women, which we work with a ton of, is they always want to perma-diet.
Right.
So if the goal was to get to 125, we want to get to like 122 to 123. So the minute we touch food again, the high end's 125. And then we want to work it up because nobody knows what you weigh at the end of the day. It's how you feel about what you weigh. So most of those girls that they're looking at weigh a substantial amount more than they think. It's like having the information. It's when I first started doing in-person training, I remember getting girls in there and I'd be like, oh, she weighs 110. I'm like, wow, she's 140.
Yeah.
How, man, she holds it really well. And then I get the next one. Okay, she's 130 because she's taller and she's like 155, 160. And I'm like, wait a minute. Oh, they were full of it. Because everyone lies about what they weigh. And when you start seeing the real deal, you're like, oh, okay, guys doing a reverse, right? I weigh 225 and they weigh like 200, right? So, to the flip side,
I think that this reverse process, it's, I know you and I talked about this before, but like, it's such a sensitive topic because you come in and tell someone, okay, we're going to have to get you eating more calories to lose weight. They look at you like you have five heads and like you have no idea what you're talking about because that's what diet culture has said. So depending on where the client comes in at, right, where you start them, we either go into a reverse if they're already at a place where it's like, okay, you're really, really low. We're not going to see any more results if we go lower. Or, okay, they're sitting pretty good. We can diet them first before going into a reverse. Now, let's talk about this roller coaster because it's not only just a roller coaster of like, okay, low calories, high calories, low calories, high calories. It's also like a mental roller coaster for all of the clients. I don't care who you are going through that process. You've got to work on the mentality aspect of it as well. And this whole process of a reverse, I feel like it's not new to us, but like to society, it kind of is newly talked about and stuff. So a lot of people, I feel like, don't technically really understand the process of it and how it helps. So can we kind of talk a little bit about like why we need to increase those calories to get that metabolism back up? Because a lot of times they're like, that doesn't make sense at all. And I know a lot of people listening are probably thinking that too.
So the biggest thing and the biggest reason why you want to get that metabolism up is let's say you were coming to any of us for fat loss. The reason you got there is because you don't burn enough calories or you consume too much or a combination. So if we can get you, like I'll get girls eating 2,500, 3,000, 3,500. I promise you, if you are a girl eating 3,000 calories a day, it's really, really hard to get fat because you can eat an entire pizza and still have 500 to 1,000 calories left for that day. And I'm going to tell you right now, you're not going to want to eat that much. So we want to do this for longevity, because if you have to eat, you know, 1200 calories for the rest of your life, good luck. If we get you up to 2,500, you're going to be like, please don't up my meal plan. Like, I can't eat anymore. Exactly. Right. And
I've been there before. I completely understand. You're like, I can't hit my macros. I'm stuffed.
And that's when we have a win, right? Because when you're begging me not to up the food, I know that we're never going to have that problem again. So that's really what we want to do is we want to get that metabolism cranking. So if you have like, you wouldn't want like work springs a surprise party. You're like, nope, I'm out of calories for the day. You're like, I burned 30 grand. I'm good. Let's go to the pizza. Right. And
I think that's the huge thing that we like to look at, like long-term for our girls. Like, do you want to track calories every day and for like the rest of your life? And most of the time they're like, well, that doesn't sound ideal. Right. So that's the purpose of doing this process. So we can get you to a point where your body utilizes the food so efficiently that you don't have to track and you're not going to put back on weight because your body is functioning the way it's supposed to with your metabolism.
When you get it firing up, I would do full bodybuilding preps without doing a meal plan. I would just cut my portions back.
Yeah.
So I never would calculate the calories on it. I'm like, oh, I did a cup of couscous. I'm going to do a half a cup of couscous.
Cool. Here we go.
Right. Oh, my scale went down. I'm going to eat a pizza. Right. And you could play it by that. So there's a science to it. Absolutely. And then there's an art to it because there's the mind will factor in all of this. And you have to have this stuff be where it's easy. And it's a lot easier to eat more calories and get your results than to eat less. So we got to get out of that mentality that less is bad. Right. And then at the same time, from like a relationships, dating, all that aspect, right? No, I don't think you've ever been on a date where they're like, hey, you look amazing, but can you please get on the scale so I can make sure?
Yeah.
Right? Never, like you get a guy, they're really not hard to impress, right? They're like, oh my God, she's fit. She looks amazing. So it's more judgment on yourself. So with that in mind, chase the look more than the scale. And if we can get that scale up 10 pounds, sounds ooga booga scary, right? But if we're 10 pounds up of muscle, you're leaner, you look amazing, and you burn more calories. Yeah. So now you're not going to have that issue. So that should be the goal upon goals, is to increase some muscle mass where we can have that, you know, still feminine look, but rank the calories up so high that it doesn't matter if you go have to go on a date, you got a birthday party, et cetera, you can survive whatever storm comes your way. You don't got to worry about planning for vacation because you're like, cool, I can eat everything in my path. I'm like Pac-Man.
Bring on the margarita. I'm good. Okay, yeah, I love that. And I was going to say something else about the reverse that.
Well, the biggest strategy to implement it, right? So you got to think, say if you're a female going in, you're obviously in a calorie deficit, right? So you're losing whatever, a pound a week, that's 500 calories a day. You could theoretically eat 500 calories more just to maintain.
Yeah,
so
right.
That's not even a reverse at that point.
Right.
That's just maintenance. So I think getting over that fear of food first,
mm-hmm.
and then increasing it, because usually what it is the body in its metabolic adaptation, it works both ways. So it will reduce as you cut down calories if you give it a reason to. You're lifting less weight, you're moving less, you're losing muscle mass, is going to adapt even quicker to that.
Right.
And then the other thing to look at on the up, it does the same thing. The body doesn't want to put on a copious amount of body fat. So if we go up, so like, let's say you were at 1,000 calories or whatever, and okay, 1500 is your maintenance. If you went up to 1500, you're not in a reverse, you're maintaining where you're at. So we might go to 1500 for a week or two. And then what's going to happen, because you threw more food in, it's like putting more wood on a campfire. Metabolism goes up. Now all of a sudden you're down 2 pounds. Well, now that's a good indicator that, hey, cool, it's time to bump the food up.
Yep.
So let's bump it up 125 and cut back some activity, because maybe you're doing too much cardio, you hate your life, right? So, okay, cool. Let's not do these 30-minute cardio sessions and bump those. And so then we do these levers. If you're fine with your physical activity, cool, add 250 calories in a day.
Yep.
Weigh yourself next week. If you haven't went up, cool, do it another week. And then if it starts to go down, throw some more food at it and see where it comes. Usually from this point, for everyone listening, you're probably hitting your protein goals, right? So the food isn't more chicken. It's not more tilapia. It's not more tuna. It's not more beef, right? It's nothing to do with that. It's more carbs and fat.
Yeah.
And so if your body fat's a little bit higher, get most of your calories from fat.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a lean person, you're going to process carbs, you're hyperactive, cool, get more carbohydrates.
Yeah.
And now we're going to have functional fuel for what you're doing. But the protein does not need to go up, right? That's a consistent.
Yep. I love the way you just explained that, because that's very easily kind of understood.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's...
Have you heard health and fitness coaches talk about how your metabolism can help you burn fat even while you're sleeping? And you just think, how? Trust me, we get it. It's all so confusing to know what you need to do to get your metabolism working the way you want it to. But today, you're in luck. We've created a done-for-you daily checklist that will set your metabolism on fire. All you have to do is DM us checklist and we will send it your way completely for free. All right, now let's get back to the episode.
Been explained on like generic social media like that.
Yeah.
You know, well, at least from what
I've seen. You gotta have the secret sauce for it.
Right, because a lot of times people think, oh, okay, just increase my calories. And then people will just like, sloppily, for lack of better words, if that's even a word, but like increase their calories, and then they end up putting on a lot of weight. And it's like, there's a time and a reason.
You probably see this issue too. So like when you got clients dieting down, they're diligent, right? They're weighing every cherry they eat. Like, oh, this cherry was 3 grams over. And then the minute you flip that script,
that goes out the window.
Goes out the window. But the thing is like you still have to do it until you're where you want to be. When you get in maintenance mode, then it's portion. But if we start mindlessly increasing calories, you will put on more body fat than you think, simply by the peanut butter theory. You're like, that was 100 calories. No, that was
500 calories.
Yes, it is. So, because really, we're not talking a high amount of increase per week, right? It's just a little bit. So find where you're most hungry throughout the day, throw the calories in that meal, increase it so it's less miserable, right? It's more enjoyable. And then, okay, cool, get the response, gauge your progress. Now you can try to increase it even more. And then if you do that slow enough over time, you're going to get some badass results. You're going to be eating more calories than you ever thought possible.
Yep.
And now you're set up for long-term success.
Yeah, 100%.
I found myself doing that in the past before, I'll admit it. Like, I'd have 1,000 calories left for the day. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to eat a pint of ice cream because I need to fill this gap.
Yeah.
And obviously, it didn't really get me to where I wanted to go. But I was just telling somebody the other day, she was like, well, I'm really not that hungry. And I'm like, girl, because you're not eating enough. Like, she's eating like maybe 1,000 calories. I'm like, I know it sounds a little counterintuitive, but you got to eat a little bit more and then you'll become more hungry over time.
Yeah. And look at it like this, right? So like, first and foremost, I am not a fan of fasting, right? Whatever your guys' opinion on it, cool. But I am not a fan. But if I say, okay, cool.
Hormones.
Yeah. Well, not even from a hormone perspective, from a psychological, anytime you restrict something completely, that's why I don't like keto. Like all food's bad. Really?
Yeah.
Like, is that really the best approach to take here? All carbs are bad. All fats are bad. Whatever it is, right? Those extremes don't work. But the problem with fasting and where we can find useful information in it is if you start fasting that first day, what's happening? You're like, oh my God, I heard a crinkle wrapper. That's a chip. I'm starving, right?
Yep.
But by day two or by day three, if you're doing a longer fast, your body has realized it's not getting food. So it's dropping the hunger signals. So at the same time, like when you're someone who's chronically under eating, your body doesn't want to be miserable. So it starts dropping those hunger signals. So you're not constantly seeking food because it knows it's not going to get it. And that's not a good position to be in.
So when you start eating again.
Exactly. So there was actually a post on social media, and this one drove me bananas because I think personally, appetite is a terrible gauge of progress.
Yeah.
And so this guy, huge following and all that, he's like, if you're dieting, how you know it works is you go to bed hungry. I'm like, that is the worst advice I've ever heard.
That's not correct.
I go to bed with a Buddha belly every night, right? Whether I'm dieting or not. Like my biggest meal is the last meal of the day. Point being, hunger is not a good gauge. There's people that are 400 pounds that are hungry all day. Does that mean they're in a calorie deficit? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
And there's people that are dropping weight every week and never hungry.
Right.
And which is great because you're getting the food satiety right. You're like, oh, cool. They're well fed.
You're feeling it properly.
So don't listen to hunger as a gauge for progress because that's not it. Now, I do use hunger as a gauge for how well the metabolism's working. Mm-hmm. Because if you're getting hungrier when you start a program, that's yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The body's like, oh, we're burning more. We better eat more.
We need more food, please. You're like, great, let's feed it more.
Yep. So use that. Like instead of looking at hunger as a negative, look at it like, wow, what I'm doing is working, right? My metabolism's going. Now, don't starve yourself in that process. But if you're someone who's eating 1,000 calories a day and not hungry, you might have to do some shakes, some liquid food to try to get that calorie total up mm-hmm. till the body goes, oh, okay, let's do this. Let's burn a few more.
Yep. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. I think that's super helpful for people listening. And also, like, if any of our clients are listening too, hope you guys are informed. We're actually going to do a masterclass on metabolic training for our one-on-one clients next week. So that's why I was like, this is like a fun conversation leading into all of that. So this has been amazing and super, super helpful. Any other questions that you had out of that?
Actually, yeah, my question goes back to the beginning of your story, really. So how did you go from, recovering from open heart surgery mm-hmm. back into training in the gym? Like, what was the bridge between that?
So I think the biggest thing going into that, and this goes into mindset, right? So you got to remember going into it, I was rug pull, right? I'm thinking I'm this in shape dude, nothing can stop me. And all of a sudden they're like, hey, you're dying. We don't know if you'll be able to work out. And that was within like a 12-hour period.
Yeah.
And so that was something I 17 years, right? Eat, sleep, breathe, bodybuilding, right? I knew nothing else. And to have that rug pulled, the biggest thing that your mind wants to do is it wants to go dark. Mm-hmm. And this is the biggest thing I've seen because I'm in the heart ward with everyone else that's dying. Okay. And I'm actually dying worse than most of them in there. And I'm like half their age. Mm-hmm. And there's no nice way to put it, but they were whiny babies, mm-hmm. right? And I could not stand it because they're like, oh, I was so tired. You don't understand. I couldn't even drive. And I'm like, I'm in here still training all my clients. I'm like, I don't understand. Like, I feel like garbage too, but that's not their problem.
Yeah.
So what I approached it with is like, I wasn't going to let myself go down that hole because everyone else that I see get a diagnosis, get something bad happen to them, they play that poor me card and it gives the power to the situation.
Yep.
So I said, I will not do this. I will not complain. Joe Dispenza is one of my favorite speakers, right? He's big on the mindset training and stuff like that. But I started doing a lot of proactive journaling and stuff, like picturing what life was going to be like after, right? Like I'm coming back from this no matter what. And then when I got out, I had another surgery right after heart surgery. I had a hernia that I got from the heart surgery right 6 weeks later. So I was getting cut open left and right. Super, super fun. But I wasn't going to let that slow me down. So I'm like, I know bodybuilding. I'm like, if I can come back and do this, two things, right? I came back, right? I'm me again. Mm-hmm. The second was I have the ultimate bullshit meter, right? No one can call it out, right? No one can say like, oh, my struggle, right? I'm like, I can't top heart
utilize
surgery.
Utilize this, right? Yeah.
They can't top heart surgery, right? So I'm going to go into it from that. So I made it very, very high priority to not get down, not complain, not suck everyone else down with me
mm-hmm.
and be that terrible person. Like nobody wants that as a friend. Like you're like, God, I don't really want to hang out with Cody today because he's so gloomy and he's
Debbie Downer. Yeah,
exactly. So I did a big case of fake it till I make it, right? It was, it was rough, but there's something to be said about doing that. So then when I came out, there wasn't any other options on the table. I knew what I was going to do, and it was already done before it was done because I had to do it to prove to myself that I could still do it, right? And I checked that box off, and the mindset is huge. And I do not think people put enough emphasis on that because if you can't see where you're going, how are you going to get there?
Right.
Right? You can't see the finish line. And so that same principle can be applied to a lot of things. So if you get like a client, they can't even see themselves being skinny, go buy that bikini girl and tack it on your wall.
Yep.
I know it sounds dumb. You don't think you can fit it. But if you start putting that cue in your head every single day, all your decisions that you make throughout the day are going to favor that versus ignoring it like you've done for the last 10, 15, 20 years and having a snack of M&Ms as you walk by the desk, right? Where it doesn't count, whatever it is. And when you keep that on the forefront of the brain, you're much more likely to achieve the results that you're going for because it's constantly a train of thought.
100%. And I think you touched on a pretty good point of like this thought that you wanted, like you've seen it as so unattainable for so long that you just push it aside. It's like, no, let's put it right in front of you and run straight to it.
Well, and the other thing on that note, right, where I think a lot of people fail, social media is huge about painting the pleasure.
Yeah.
Use the pain. Pain is twice the motivation as pleasure will ever be. And I'm not saying to live in misery land, but here's the thing. Like I have gals that when they start getting stuck, right, we're down like 30, 40, 50 pounds. They're getting cozy, but they're not at their goal.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, cool. We're going to do Tank Top Tuesday. And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, you don't like how your arms look, right? And they're like, well, no. I'm like, cool. I want you to take a selfie of a tank top in the gym on Tuesday or we're not training anymore. Yeah. And they're like, are you serious? I'm like, absolutely, I'm serious.
I'm serious. Do it.
Yeah. So they do it and they're like, oh, that wasn't as bad, right? But you got to face the monster. Problems can't live in the light. But at the same time, if you know something makes you uncomfortable, that's a bigger leverage tool than something that's, I'm going to be on this bikini beach in, you know, June. That's motivating, but picture that bikini busting when you get there in June. And I'm sure you'll find a lot more motivation than the other way, because that pain is much more useful when it comes to fitness than the pleasure will ever be. So if you find yourself getting comfortable, cool. Wear an outfit that you don't think looks good on you, right? Because maybe your stomach pokes out of it or whatever. And you're going to get a solemn reminder. And the thing is, nobody's going to judge you for it, right? If you work at a restaurant, you look just like anyone else out there. But your own perception of how you feel, it will make you uncomfortable enough that you will adhere to your plan. But you're going to order smaller portions, maybe not eat out so much that weekend, whatever it is, because you're now problem aware. And if we just hide the problem, it's really easy to brush past it. But when it's always on the brain, and if you're at your goal, cool. But if you got pain, throw the gas on that fire and use that until you can finally get what you're shooting for.
Yeah, I love that.
I know, I love that a lot. I think keeping it front and center is really, really important. And a lot of the times on like the onboarding calls, I sit down with the girls and I make them go over like, okay, why are we doing this?
Yep.
And like, I've been giving them homework. Hey, I want you to write this down. Like, yeah, we have it right here on this piece of, document online, but I want you to go write it down and put it like on your wall or your calendar or whatever it is. So you can
like that stuff in front of me right here. Yeah. You can't see it. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Well, that's the thing. And people, if you can't see it, there's going to be zero chance of you achieving it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If you think it's so out of reach, and when they finally do that, and then you also have to look at your social circle to some extent, right? If you have 5 very overweight friends and you're trying to be the skinny one, every situation that those friends are in is probably pulling you away from your goal. And I'm not saying cut your friends out, but at the same time, there's income associations, marriage associations, like all these things associated with that inner group you hang out with.
Yep.
So you got to watch what you're doing. And if you're aware of it, right, you can plan for it, right? Especially if you get the metabolism crank. But at the same time, like all these things will factor in the journey of your fitness more than that, couple hours you spend in the gym or the couple hours you spend food prep. If everything is a self-destructive force to your goal, good luck hitting your goal.
Right.
Oh, I like how you just
said mic drop. Right. Finish there. Well, that's the thing. So I think that is one of the biggest takeaways I would say is, put the goal on the burner, Yeah. And get uncomfortable, get comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yes. I started in group coaching and I was coached at F45 for a while. And I used to say that in every one of my classes, I would like scream it out to people, like, get comfortable being uncomfortable right now. I love that saying. Yeah.
Well, and it's like a Arnold quoted, I think it was Muhammad Ali doing it. Somebody would ask him back, how many sit-ups do you do? He goes, I don't know. I only count when it starts burning. Right. he'd wait till it started to burn. And then he's like, one, two,
there we go.
Like, he never was like, I did 486. He's like, I did 12, right? Yeah. Whatever it was. Yeah. And so like he was comfortable with uncomfortable, and that's why he was so great.
Yeah.
And if you can take that as fuel. So usually we get that little bit of burn and we're like, I quit. I was like, well, this is getting uncomfortable. Maybe I should see what I can do, right? Like what can I push through here?
Because
oftentimes like that first little bit where it starts burning, that's just where the magic starts. And maybe you got a few more in there, right? Like you start getting winded on the treadmill, you're counting by minutes. Cool. But like you still got many, many more in the tank. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And so you can use the pleasure to pull you through, but you can also use the pain to push you through.
Yeah.
And using both of those in contrast, that's where you're going to find better results from anything you're doing in life.
Yeah.
Those are your big levers.
I love your perspective on life and everything. Yeah.
That's great. And I think that's super, not only motivating, but also like just super helpful when it comes to like helping people. Like this whole conversation, I feel like has been something that people can tactically go and make a change with, not just be like, okay, yeah, you're inspiring me, motivational talk, but also like you've given me tips to like actually go and try it out in my own life and stuff, which I love talking on topics like that because it gives people actually things to go do.
Yeah.
Obviously we like encouraging people too, but if they have something to actually go and do, then that helps with their progress and can push them in the right direction.
Absolutely.
This has been fabulous. Great.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you. I want you to like kind of plug yourself, like let people know like where they can find you and where like things like that.
Yeah. So Instagram, Facebook, they're going to be the biggest places to find me. Cody Watkins Fitness on either one. You'll find me on those. YouTube got shut down for some reason, so there's no YouTube right now. I'm not quite sure why on that one. I think I have a TikTok. I don't really get on that one. My personal Facebook is Cody Watkins Fit, so I got kind of both of those. But Instagram is the one I'm most active on. So if you guys got questions, I post a lot of stuff on there that's some pretty high value. That's a good place to find me.
Awesome. Yeah. Sounds good. Awesome. Well, thank you for coming and doing this. I loved this conversation. This was great. And I really appreciate you taking the time today.
Absolutely. It's been fantastic.
Of course. All right, you guys. Well, we will talk to you next Wednesday and have a great day. Bye.